All right. Are you at a place where you can read the third stanza of
sure.
Yahweh's, this is Exodus 27?
You shall not lift up, support, or advance, forgive or dignify, respect or tolerate through the name or reputation of Yahweh, your God, accordingly, lifeless and worthless deception or devastating and destructive falsehood. For indeed Yahweh will not forgive or leave unpunished those who relationally deceive, beguile, or delude, using clever trickery to mislead in association with his name, to promote vain and ineffectual lies which lead to lifelessness and destruction, or devastating deceptions which nullify our existence, leading to emptiness.
Wow. Now, my perspective, I think also from yours, Yoel, this is perhaps the most misunderstood and yet powerful sentence that has ever been written.
Or you could just summarize it, don't take the Lord's name in vain. Or don't say, God damn it, one or the other.
Yep, and that summation of it, that desire to make God appear trivial, even egotistical and mean-spirited, is precisely how it has been corrupted. You know, depending on how, as we talked about in our previous program, depending on how NASA is pointed, the Hebrew letters can convey an entirely different meaning. You know, it can either be, in fact, I'll let you share this and we'll move on.
You shall not, now this is NASA, lift up, advance, support, accept, or tolerate. Well, the alternative rendering could be, you shall not, NASA, deceive or delude, cleverly tricking people, beguiling them and causing them to miss the way.
Yeah.
In most cases, it's probably both.
Yeah, that's I agree. And the fact that NASA and SHOW are twice in this statement enables us to convey both meanings of NASA and the completed meaning of SHOW. And with that in mind, since we're covering material that we did discuss on Friday of last week, can we have you read the more amplified version of Exodus 27, Yoel, that's a few paragraphs
sure.
down?
You shall not lift up, bear, or advance, there's NASA, support or desire, forgive or dignify, respect or tolerate, or / deceive or delude, deploy clever tricks, beguiling people and causing them to miss the way. Through the name or reputation, Shem, of Yahweh, your God, or Elohim. According, and this is with the intent to promote or effect, La, there, lifeless and worthless deception, or devastating and destructive falsehood, Shav. That's lies, which nullify our existence, leading to emptiness and nothingness. Or vain promises which are deceitful, desolate, ineffectual, futile, and ruinous. For indeed, or because, Yahweh will not forgive or leave unpunished, rakah, free from guilt, exempt from judgment and sentencing, pardon or release. Which is important there.
Yes.
Because it's not just leave unpunished, it's the metaphor of the whole judgment and pardoning.
Right, because there's two aspects of everyone who is judged is going to suffer one of two fates, and both fates here are being accommodated. One is the annihilation of one's soul, and the other one being the actual punishment of being sent into the abyss, which is akin to a black hole.
Yep. So again, it's maybe even less of the punishment rather than you're just not going to be found innocent. You're not going to be exempted.
Right, and what follows in terms of the proper translation of show specifically says that. What it says that you know you're leading people to the point where they will cease to exist. They will be nothing, worthless. So it is reemphasizing the reality that the second door is, if you will, the second fate for human souls, the most prolific, which is the destruction of the soul, the ceasing to exist, is the thing that Yahweh doesn't want these people to do. That if you do that, if you lead people towards that state, you will not be forgiven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again there, for indeed Yahweh will not forgive or free you from guilt, exempt you from judgment and sentencing, pardon or release, or leave you unpunished. Those who relationally deceive, beguile, or delude. Nasa again. Advance, lift up, support, bear, or desire, forgive, or dignify, respect, or tolerate. / use clever trickery to mislead in association with or through his Shem, or name, or reputation, or renown. To promote and affect vain and ineffectual lies which lead to lifelessness and destruction. Shav. Which is, again, devastating deceptions which nullify our existence, leading to emptiness, worthlessness, and nothingness. Deceitful, desolate, futile, and ruinous vanity.
Yep, it's a stunningly important statement when properly understood. And so what's known as the third commandment, which is actually the third codicil of Yahweh's introduction, is really a referendum on the promotion of false and lifeless teachings in the name of God. You know, if this were a gun, the crosshairs would be on religion. Man-made schemes which lead to the unnecessary nullification of human consciousness and to the destruction of our souls. This instruction is committed to a singular purpose, which is the repudiation, the exposure and condemnation, the consequence of religion. It is a overtly anti-religious statement.
Yep.
Now, we've talked here considerably about NASA and the fact that it has two meanings, both of which apply and both of which should be used in this context. There's a second interesting term here. And as I've mentioned before, there is no V in an ancient Paleo or Babylonian Hebrew, corrupting the wa so that it conveys the V sound instead of the O or U is a modern contrivance. So Shav, as it is listed in all of our lexicons, is actually show.
Mm-hmm.
And its connotations range from ravage and devastate to lifelessness and desolation, from emptiness and falsehood to vanity, futility, and failure. It even means deceit, deception, and fraud. So show can be rendered worthless lying as well as ineffectual teaching, which leads to nothingness, to being ravaged.
Too, they don't, the political and religious leaders, I don't think get, you made a good point of adding in the application, they don't get a get-out-of-jail-free card because they don't know and or have thrown out Yahweh's name. It's Shem has the connotation of kind of renown or,
correct,
as you put, reputation.
Correct.
Basically, identity.
Right. Yeah, Yahweh, as he does throughout the introduction to the commandments, weaves his name into each of his statements because he alone is God. But he used, in this particular case, he included Shem in addition to his name. And Shem, while its primary meaning is a personal and proper name, Shem in Hebrew also conveyed the renown of someone, their reputation. And so while Catholicism and Protestant Christianity doesn't preach falsely in the name of Yahweh, they do communicate destructive and deceitful dogmas in the reputation of God. And so they don't get a get out of punishment free card for separating Yahweh's name for this, because that's just one of their lifeless deceptions. So it is, and it is this word show, which is so incredibly important as it relates to conveying that the consequence of religious deception is that it wastes and ruins souls, causing them not to exist You know, God gave us this wonderful gift of life and this wonderful gift of free will, this wonderful Nesama conscience, so that we could, and this wonderful treasure of His Word, His Torah, so that collectively we could capitalize on this gift of life and of free will and on information and the seat of judgment, to choose to extend our life for all eternity, getting to know Yahweh as He is and capitalizing on the path that He has provided for us to enter paradise with Him, to camp out with Him, Sukkah. And yet, religious deceptions, which are lifeless, these failed and futile, vain deceits and deceptive dogmas, these frauds, all show they lead to nothingness, to souls being ravaged and devastated, wasted and ruined, ceasing to exist. That is the consequence of religion. So since show in conjunction with NASA comprise the Torah's only unforgivable sin. I don't know if everyone here is aware of that, but there is only one unforgivable sin in Yahweh's word. Only one. This is it. It says, I will not forgive. God cannot forgive religious deception. He can't forgive the advocates of Christianity, the advocates of Islam, the advocates of socialist secular humanism. He is not willing to forgive those who promote these schemes. It's the only unforgivable sin in God's word, in the Torah. Now, in the Renewed Covenant, we have Yeshua saying that belittling the set-apart spirit is unforgivable. Okay? So, in addition to Yahweh stating that religious, the promotion and acceptance of religious deception is an unforgivable sin, to that Yeshua adds, as is belittling our spiritual mother, which is, by the way, the product of religion.
And I'm just shooting from the hip here, but I do kind of get the sense of, I think it's unforgivable, meaning He will not pardon you or, you know, pay the fine for you if you are doing that. But I think it's one of those where it's not necessarily, and I haven't really thought this through or read all the, you know, documentation I would like to really come to a 100% certain or a more positively certain point. But it might be not one of those things where once you do that, the game's over. I think you can say, oh, what I was doing before was, you know, deceitful, is leading people away, I'm getting out of religion type of thing,
mm-hmm.
after you've done it. But you cannot accept the gift, meaning the gift is not being handed to you. Even if you say, I want it, you answer the door if you are doing these things. I don't think that it's unforgivable, meaning once you've done it, that's it. You know, one strike, you're out. No tolerance policy. I don't think it's that, but... Just
I your point here, Yoel, is an outstanding one, and I'm going to share my conclusions as well, which don't differ markedly from your own. But understand that the words are very clear. It says, you know, if you advance and tolerate and promote lifeless deceptions in the name and reputation of Yahweh, which lead people to their demise, that is unforgivable. So that's what the words say, and anything that you and I extrapolate beyond that have to be looked at as, here's two guys who love Yahweh and love His Word sharing their thoughts on this, because the direction we have that He wrote with His own hand is unequivocal. Now, here's what I think. Is that those who are really the advocates of religious deception, the pastors and the priests and the rabbis and the imams and all of this sort of thing, they aren't ever going to come around. I think Yahweh knows that those who are the real advocates for these lifeless deceptions, their iniquity is full. They aren't going to come around. As for the victims, I think that the victims can be forgiven, but just as you have said, the victim can't be forgiven so long as they are immersed in the lifeless deception. For them to be forgiven, they must do what Abraham did. They must first leave the religion and the political schemes that they have embraced. And we received a wonderful email from somebody, Yoel, you may have noticed, who endured the entirety of questioning Paul. I thought they were a religious person because their email speaks of them as being associated with a ministry. So you see ministry and you think of, Christian. And I recommended they read Questioning Paul. And I received a letter back from them about a week ago saying, I've read the whole thing. I concur with your findings. Paul was a false prophet. And the evidence is unequivocal. I was never questioning whether or not the case was made, but it was still astonishing to me that a guy that marketed himself under the title of being associated with the ministries could come to that realization. Because until you leave the religion, I don't think you can be forgiven. You can know Yahweh. And he wrote me back over the weekend saying that he, like you, had been raised as a Roman Catholic, came to recognize that Roman Catholicism was false, and then I subsequently became a Christian, and then recognized that Christianity was false as well, and then gradually over time came to recognize that the Torah that Yahweh spoke through was an entirely different message, and came to know Yahweh through the Torah, and as part of that process came to start reading Yada Yahweh, and came to know Yahweh through his word. So here's somebody that was victimized by Roman Catholicism, was victimized by Protestant Christianity of the Baptist variety, who clearly knows Yahweh and is a beneficiary now of his forgiveness, which is an affirmation of what you've said, that if you're the victim of these things, you can be forgiven, but not while you are still victimized by them.
Well, I think you can, by looking at all the nuances of Rakah, it's not to me overtly just a slam dunk, the door is shut, one strike, you're out. Just if you look at all the nuances of Rakah, which, you know, again, so to me it's not unequivocal to say that it's unforgivable. It's more that it could also be interpreted potentially to me that I am not going to forgive anyone who's doing this. Not that it's unforgivable if you ever do this. I mean, it's tough for us to make that little subtle nuance, I think, in translating to English.
Yeah, it's true that verb tenses from one language to another are a challenge. And while the most accurate translation from the Hebrew to the English is, I will not forgive, I will not pardon, nor will I leave unpunished those who do these things. The thing that I think I would rely upon is that that NASA is a verb, and he's talking about not pardoning and not forgiving those who do these things. And the verb, the doing, is reflected in NASA, which is the verb. And so typically, as the victim of a religious deception, you are not the doer, you're the doee. You're the one who something, the verb action is done to. And so under that basis, the literal interpretation would be that it is the perpetrators of religious deception who God will not forgive, not those who have been influenced by the religious deception. That being the case, my experience is that it is extraordinarily difficult for someone to come to know Yahweh while they're still under the delusion of their religion.
Yeah.
You've got to question your religion before you're able to know God.
And the only point I'm making is the Deweys, if for some, you know, the one in a billion that
yeah.
says, you know, I've been screwing people over for my whole life here.
Yep.
I got to stop. I got to
right.
start doing. I don't think.
Should
think
it be possible? Right.
Just assuming that it's possible. I'm not
hypothetically.
Hypothetically. I
right.
don't think that the language here is definite hardcore. It has to be once you've done it, that's it. You know, you can't be forgiven. I think it's more likely, and especially if you look at all the nuances of pardoning or releasing, meaning I'm not going to pardon you until you've, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
If you're participating yeah. in this stuff, you can't be forgiven.
Yeah.
I don't care
yeah.
if you accept
yeah.
my gift. I can't.
Right.
Whatever. You
yeah.
can't
I think here, Yoel, and this is important. I mean, so this discussion we're having here, and we're not very far off, I don't think, in our understanding of this. But since this is, I think, the single most important statement Yahweh ever communicated to us, us discussing the nuances of it, I think, is essential. So I'm happy to do this. But first, your hypothetical is literally dealing with perhaps one in a million, and maybe worse, of the likelihood of somebody hypothetically going from being the perpetrator of religious deception to someone who says, you know, I was wrong, I'm going to leave that, I'm going to renounce what I previously did, and now I'm going to search for the truth and then openly acknowledge the truth about Yahweh. Well, I suppose that is possible, and I would not be any way, shape, or form uncomfortable with Yahweh making an accommodation for that kind of person. In fact, I'm certain that he has an accommodation. It is just really unlikely. I wouldn't bank on being that kind of person or finding that kind of or encouraging that kind of person. It's a person who is a zealot for a religious cause is, my experience is, they aren't salvageable. There is no hope for them. Now, and the literal meaning of this seems to suggest that. But should somebody renounce their former deception and leave it and come to know Yahweh and rely on his solution as he's delineated in the very Torah that they were previously attacking, I suppose that it is possible that that Yahweh could forgive them. I've got no issue with that.
I think it's, you know, possible because to me a deceiver is also someone, you know, almost anyone that goes to a seminary of any sort. And even if they have the best of intentions and this, that, or whatever, they still, you know, to go through all of that study and all of that inundation and not find a place where you say, you know, this doesn't sit quite right with me, but I'm going to go with it anyway. Otherwise, I'm not all this, these years of doing this and whatever and all the stuff I want to do is for naught.
Yeah. Let me give you a good example of a possibility here. Well, I don't know if he really knows Yahweh, so I don't know if he has been forgiven or not, but I do know that that there is a fellow who was a teacher and imam in Islam, educated at the highest-rated Islamic institution in the world, a professor, Ph.D. in Islamic history, who came to recognize that Islam is rotten to the core, that it is a terrorist manifesto, and that Allah was modeled after Satan. He goes under, writes under the English name Mark Gabriel. And so there's an example of somebody who figured it out. Their religion was rotten to the core, and he has come to recognize that that in this book that we errantly call the Bible, there is a real God and that he has a message which he wants us to hear. I don't know if he's made it all the way to the process of relying on Yahweh's solution to be pardoned. But it appears like he's well on the way. And so he would be the one in a million that that you're speaking of, potentially.
Yep. So anyway.
Okay. I don't know if you've dialed down to find it, there is a quotation from Jeremiah 18:15.
Yeah, I'm not at it right now. So if you could.
Okay. I'll read it here. And this is important as it relates to show. It says, indeed, because my people have ignored, overlooked, and forgotten me, and they make smoke offerings and burn incense to empty lies and vain and worthless deceptions, show. And they have caused them to, my people, to stumble and falter, walking in the ancient ways, along a path and in a way of life, which does not build up nor lift up. So here, this is, that's Yeremiah 18:15. Here, show, empty lies and vain and worthless deceptions, is being explicitly disassociated with God and directly associated with traditional religious and societal traditions.
Could that also be Shaw, as far as pronunciation?
Yeah, it's it's comprised of the shin and the wa, and what's interesting here is that the last letter here isn't being vocalized. So typically you would pronounce the W as an O sound. So it'd be show, but I wasn't even taught English phonics. So when it comes to being a person to say, well, this is how this is pronounced, all I can tell you is there is no V in ancient Paleo or Babylonian Hebrew. I can tell you that for certain. And so, and that the letter that has been replaced by the V sound is the Hebrew wa. So that's all I can tell you here is that it is not Shav.
It just seemed odd to me to go from the taking out the V and going from a short A to a long O.
Yes, but the Torah so Torah is from the wa in this particular case, but the long O or the U sound, either one is possible, and I'm not smart enough to know which one should be conveyed by the wa here. So I can't be of any help beyond to tell you it's not Shav.
Okay, so you keep saying Shav.
It could be Shu, and it could be Sho. Either one, but it's not Shav. Then in Psalm 24, 2 through 3 and 4, we discover that the Messiah, as the living embodiment of the of what we call the third commandment, it's actually the third codicil in Yahweh's sweeping overview of the Torah, and in the context of Shabbat, the promise of seven, which defines the Sabbath, we find God refining the meaning of lo nasa show or shu.
Okay. Who is he who shall ascend, rising up on Yahweh's mountain? And who is he who will take a stand and establish on his set-apart and purifying dwelling place? The one whose hands are innocent and whose nature and heart are pure, radiant light. The only one who, by association, does not lift up, support, tolerate, or forgive, Nasa, the soul who promotes vain and ineffectual delusions which lead to lifelessness and destruction, or show, devastating and deceitful deceptions which nullify our existence, leading to emptiness, worthlessness, and nothingness. And he does not swear oaths or make promises, Shabbat, the promise of seven as embodied in the Sabbath, that is, which are deceitful, deceptive, misleading, or dishonest, Mirma.
Wow. So this is, again, speaking of the Messiah, Yeshua, and the one by association who does not lift up, support, tolerate, or forgive, Nasa, the soul who promotes vain and ineffectual delusions which lead to lifelessness and destruction, Show. And he does not swear oaths or makes promises which are deceitful, deceptive, or misleading and dishonest. You know, many of the Psalms are done in couplets, where something is stated and then it's stated again, but using different words so that you have a better way to understand what is being said here. And so that second part of the couplet, he does not swear oaths or make promises which are deceitful, deceptive, misleading, or dishonest, helps define the nature of shu, which is promoting vain and ineffectual delusions which lead to lifelessness and destruction, which nullify our existence. So Yeshua's answer regarding how to properly interpret this important introductory statement that Yahweh wrote with his own hand is pretty much answers the question. You know, he says, I'm not going to do this. If you do this, this is the consequence. So why do you suppose every English translation ignored Yahweh's instruction and also this insight by way of Yeshua on this life and death matter, rendering the divine edict as a nonsensical statement, thou shalt not take the Lord thy God's name in vain? That's a totally nonsensical statement. You know, the answers here, he explained what this meant. He explained how to translate it. He explained how to understand it in Psalm 24, as well as in the Yirmiyahu passage we quoted.
With Catholics, it's just been brutal, mostly family members, that, I mean, I can't even get past the, the vain part, or, you know, the oversimplification to just the Lord's name in vain.
Right.
Because you can at least get some, if you really extrapolated and thought it through, you might be able to get the general notion of what was really said in there. I mean, if you really just thought it through and read other scripture.
Uh-huh.
I have so many friends and relatives that take it to the next level of inaneness, just think that means don't say God damn it.
Yeah.
Don't swear.
Right.
Then just don't say bad words.
Right.
I mean,
you know, if it was
God
don't say God damn it, then would Yeshua have committed a sin according to the Torah when he said, my God, why have you damned me? Those last words in the upright pole. That's God damn it, right? Yeah. The fact is, God damns. That means that God separates.
But, you know, besides that, just to see the evolution of ignorance.
Correct.
It takes you from what was obviously a much more deep and very kind of unconfusing
right.
statement about don't do things that are bad and destructive and
right.
whatever else. I mean, you can take that at multiple levels and it still means something, which is, you know, don't say for God and country and march a bunch of people into battle because God wants you to do it. You know, just because you think that God's on your side type of thing. And don't, you know, to then take that to the next level of course, you know, the soul's desolation, annihilation has, you know, obviously a bigger meaning there. But to take it from that level, to simplify it to the Lord's name in vain, to then simplify that to don't say bad words.
Yeah.
Is just unbelievable.
But imagine here that Yahweh has begun this. This is the only thing he actually wrote with his own hand, as opposed to working through prophets, because he likes to. I mean, he created men to work with him, to serve with him, and so his style is to work with men to convey his message. In this particular case, he wrote this with his own finger. All right, and so you're going to take what he wrote with his own finger, and the first introductory statement is just sweeping. You know, I'm Yahweh. I'm your God. I saved you from judgment and human oppression. You're not going to exist if you create other gods along with me. And then the next statement, you know, talking about, I don't want you to bow down in a religious setting. I don't want you to make gods. I don't want you to have these these religious depictions of false deities. And I want you to recognize that if you twist and manipulate my testimony, the consequence is going to be your children and your children's children. And that there will be thousands whom will be the beneficiaries of my mercy. And those thousands have the two things in common. They love me as who I am. And they observe my instructions. And then following that, they think he said, and don't say goddamn. Move on
or
to the next point.
Any other bad words. Because that's
or really, any other bad words.
That's what
that,
come down
that it's
to
not that he's not in keeping in his in these sweeping statements of, you know, my name is Yahweh. I'm the one who liberated you from judgment and human oppression. You're not going to exist in the presence in my presence with false gods. And don't bow down in a religious setting. And your twisting of my word is going to negate the existence of your children. And for thousands, I'm going to show my mercy for those who observe my testimony and who love me. And that he transitioned from that to minutia. I mean, what is the nature of this Christian God, of this Catholic God, that he's so fixated with minutia? He's so thin-skinned that if you use his title, God, in association with the word for separation, that he's not going to forgive you. The mindset of that is just mind-boggling. And yet, you have here something that is even more profound, even more detailed, even more sweeping than the two introductory statements he's already made. You know, don't deceive others. Don't advance or promote the deception of lifelessness schemes in the name of or reputation of Yahweh. For I will not forgive those who deceive, leading to lifelessness and the destruction.
You know, and I could see, a Catholic parent or a priest or something like that saying, oh, we know it doesn't mean don't say ass or something like that, but we just say that to the kids to get them to be, you know, proper people and stuff, which would be perfectly in line with the whole mindset, but again, it would be one of those where, as subtle and maybe small as it is, there would be a case of doing something deceitful in God's name.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, them saying that they're teaching their children not to swear, and that's their interpretation of this, is a twisting of Yahweh's statement, which leads to the detriment of their children and children's children. It's, you're going back to the previous plank in his introductory statement when you twist his word to infer that. They're living proof that Yahweh's second statement was right. Extraordinarily sad. We've already benefited from the meaning of the proper way to interpret this instruction from Yahweh with the Psalm 24, 5 and 6. Psalm 24, 7 through 10 is just spectacular stuff. So if you've got that handy, Yoel, why don't you share that with everybody?
Yeah, I think I have five, six here. With and by means of Yahweh's blessing, or Barakah, gift of the covenant, he will bear our burdens, forgive us, lift us up, and carry us away, Nasah. And as a result of God's, that's Elohim's, righteousness and justice, Tzedakah, means of vindication, he will save Yashau, or someone's name right there, he will save this generation which diligently seeks and searches for him, or Daras, which inquires about and yearns to learn everything which can be known regarding him, which cares deeply about developing a relationship with him, Daras, which could also mean which cherishes and desires doing everything which is required to nourish a close affiliation with him. Those who desire and seek after the presence of Jacob, or the son of Ishak and the grandson of Abraham.
Yeah. It's a metaphor for the covenant and for Yisrael there. So I misspoke when I gave the Psalm numbers. It's Psalm 24, 3, and 4 that helped us to find the third codicil of Yahweh's introductory statement. And then this is what follows directly thereafter, which says that by not deceiving, by not forgiving those who deceive, that that, and with the means of Yahweh's blessing, the gift of His covenant, that that Yeshua, who is the voice of this particular psalm, will bear the burdens and forgive us. You know, so that by excluding those who perpetrate religious myths, and by not doing so himself, by means of Yahweh's gift of bowing down out of love to us, his baraka, that he's going to be able to bear our burdens and forgive us, Nasa. And as a result of God's, Elohim's righteousness and justice, his vindication, his tzedakah, we will be saved, Yeshua. But he also qualifies it, just as he did in the second codicil of his introductory statement. Who is he going to save? Makes it very clear. Those who diligently seek and search for him, Daras, and who deeply care about developing a relationship with him, Daras. You know, it's just like, Daras serves the same way as that Yahweh saying that my mercy to thousands who love me and who carefully observe my instructions. Same group of people will be the beneficiary of his forgiveness. Now, the psalm then concludes by associating Yeshua with Passover, the doorway to heaven. Here's now Psalm 24, 7 through 10.
And I don't have that.
Okay. Lift up, honor, and respect the initial and crucial, the Rosh, the first, as in the first step, the summit, as in the Mount Moriah, and the uppermost, as in heaven's gate. So lift up, honor, and respect the initial and crucial, the Rosh, the first, the summits, and the uppermost gate. And lift up, honor, and respect the eternal an everlasting doorway. And he, the glorious, honored, and revered King, who is the living manifestation of power, shall arrive and return. Who is this glorious and honorable King, this royal manifestation of power, Yahweh's authorized one, Yahweh's mighty one? Raise heaven's gate, lift up the eternal doorway. The glorious King shall return. Who is he, this King, Yahweh of hosts, his manifestation of power and glory and presence is King. So it's interesting here. After associating Yeshua with the doorway to heaven, saying that he is the everlasting doorway, which is Passover, he says that, yeah, who is Yeshua? He's Yahweh. He is Yahweh's manifestation of power. He is Yahweh's glorious presence. Yeshua is Yahweh, diminished to human form. So let's summarize the essential lessons that are etched in Yahweh's introductory statement.
And that one that we just read, the last four verses there too, it's, I think what's kind of a subtle thing to
uh-huh.
take note is that it's an active engagement. It's not anyone who is right or wrong type of thing, or anyone who's done this as much as I just want someone to have, you know, be trying to get to know me. I want someone who's actively engaged and concerned and interested
right.
in having a relationship, getting to know me. There is no, I'm a better Christian than you, or I shot my ass up in the air more than you did.
Right.
And I got a big dent on my forehead. There's none of that.
Right. No. I'm just interested in two things. Did you really try to get to know me? And if you really tried to get to know me, you know, those who love me and carefully observe my instructions in the second codicil of Yahweh's introductory statement, that's all he's looking for. If you made a real effort, because if you do make a real effort in trying to get to know him based upon the only testimony that he himself has authored, you will get to know him, and you will understand that he is the doorway, that Yeshua is simply Yahweh diminished to human form. So in the 60 seconds we have left, let me share with you Exodus 27 once again, and we'll move on to the first of seven commandments with our next program. You shall not lift up, bear, nor advance through the name or reputation of Yahweh your God accordingly, lifeless and worthless deception, or devastating and destructive falsehood. For indeed, Yahweh will not forgive or leave unpunished those who relationally deceive, beguile, or delude in association with his name to promote and effect vain and ineffectual lies which lead to lifelessness and destruction. Exodus 27.